Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Oh, yes. Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And good evening, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. We're starting off just a tad early this evening.
That's good. Yep.
But no harm in that. Lots to get through. We'll be talking about the return to the moon, Artemis 2, what to see in the sky, of course, and lots more besides.
We'll get to see where the moon is and things shortly. But in the meantime, Mercury, Venus and Mars will all remain out of sight behind the glare of the sun. Jupiter at minus 2.6. It's still a fine sight in the evening. It shines around Pollux and Castor, the Gemini's twins. And it's only a little past its January 9th opposition at the moment. I've been watching it just to see which way it's been twisting and pulling against those two stars. And I keep forgetting which way it's coming in, from the right or the left. That's secret. Yeah, it's still pretty close to
it's back in prograde motion.
Yep.
Not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's still a fine sight and it's up most of the evening. It's at its highest point in the south and thus telescopically sharpest by 10 to 11 p.m. Saturn plus 1.1 in the Aquarius Pisces border. It's the brightest dot in the southwest at nightfall, lower left of the Great Square of Pegasus. And it descends through the evening and sets around 10 p.m. Yes, I have seen that as well. Uranus plus 5.6. We'll tell you a little bit of a guide point for that now shortly. And Neptune is a telescopic object, plus 7.9, extremely dim. This is just a little speck, and it's 2 degrees from Saturn at the moment. For Neptune, you're going to need a really detailed a chart finder, a finder chart, to see where it is as well. So, that's it. Hopefully the other three will come back to see us. I think they're hiding us forever.
They'll be back in the evening. So I know next month, anyway, Mercury and Venus will be back in the evening skies, I believe. Yeah. Yes.
And did mention last week there was a very thin crescent moon. Starting off, I really enjoy it. That's my favourite time for the moon, apart from maybe a quarter moon and
especially if you can see the dark side, the earth shine.
Yeah.
Basically, you can see some of the dark side, which is lit up from sunlight reflected off the earth. But speaking of the moon, tonight, I know it's a bit cloudy and the weather is not great, but the moon, that is, will occult some of the Pleiades star clusters from about 9 p.m. This evening. That's a 68% waxing gibbous moon we have at the momently. And it is, it's on view. It's actually round about lunar, what's it called? It's basically due south at its highest at the moment as we speak. It will set at 4:45 tomorrow morning and will rise again at about 11:30 tomorrow evening, when it will be able to see a bit more of it, about 75% or three quarters of the face.
You did mention it
faces towards us.
If you want to find the moon, you'll see it on the top of the Pleiades cluster. if you've missed it somehow. Moon tomorrow.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
365,871 kilometres, known as perigee, or G, or whatever you want to call it. And the Jupiter is, we were discussing this earlier on, below a 95% supermoon. How can you have a supermoon that's 95%?
Yes.
Probably because it's so close and...
I did say it was at perigee, but the moon, so just sticking with the moon for one moment, we're heading towards the first, that can't be right, is it? The first quarter, we must be heading towards the third quarter, which will be on Monday in the early hours of the morning. I get to Friday in a moment, but let's talk about the sunrise tomorrow in Dublin. That will happen at 8:20 a.m., which is 9 minutes earlier than a week ago, and local or solar noon, that's when the solar noon, is when the moon will be due south, and at its highest tomorrow, that's at 12:37 in the afternoon, 1 minute later than a week ago, and the sun sets bang on 5 p.m. tomorrow from Dublin, and various shades of twilight until astronomical twilight ends at 7:02 tomorrow evening, 11 minutes later than a week ago. What does that mean? Means tomorrow we'll have 22 minutes more daylight than a week ago.
Doesn't feel like it yet. Evening time, yes, maybe you're catching a little bit of more daylight, but morning time, it's still pretty dark.
It is, yes. That's because of the solar noon is kind of slipping out of sync with the clock on the wall. So, as I mentioned, the solar noon is at 12:37. It doesn't get much later than that. But, yes, we'll talk about the equation of time some other time, perhaps. But tomorrow, anyway, another 3 minutes, 25 seconds more daylight than today, when there'll be 8 hours and 44 minutes between sunrise and sunset. Just going back to Jupiter and pointers. Maybe you were going to mention it, John, but on Friday the 30th in the evening, that's Jupiter, 6 degrees to the lower left of the moon. You can't miss it, as you mentioned there. It's so bright. And coming up this weekend, which I was hoping to get to, as I've been to it before, and it's very much worth going to, is the Astronomy Festival in Galway, hosted by the Galway Astronomy Club. If you want to Google the Galway Astronomy Club, it'll tell you a bit about it. It's been held in the Ardalan Hotel, which is... a nice hotel.
Yeah. That name rings a bell.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We were both at a big birthday party there some years ago. Mm-hmm. And the ISS, that passed overhead about 10 minutes ago. So if you saw something bright in the sky 10 minutes ago, passing west to east, it was most likely the ISS, assuming it wasn't flashing lights. And tomorrow... at 6:36 p.m. there's another pass, not a great pass, John, about the highest it'll get is about 19 degrees above the horizon and a magnitude of -1.2. Then I think it's fading away, literally or metaphorically, until for another few weeks.
Yeah, we have it until the 30th, which is only a couple of days away. Well, 3-4 days away, so we'll get a chance to see it. You can Googleize it, as we call it, or anything you want to call it. Yep, so it's easy to find. You can catch it on the internet at some stage. And we did touch on this one, Ben, last week. 27th of January, which is today, 1967, we had the Apollo 1 fire, unfortunately, and it was Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee who were killed during a routine pre-flight rehearsal at NASA's Kennedy Space Center. And I saw there is a sort of a Netflix video type of thing on this, the whole programming of this, and it's frightening to see it. So they're nearly in complete oxygen, I think.
Yeah, it was amazing when you think of it, that they were going to use a complete 100% oxygen atmosphere. And, of course, there was a short circuit, a little spark in the electrical systems, and that caused the fire of some of the materials. And it caused, with the investigation, of course, they decided they weren't going to have 100% oxygen, because it does, as you know, support combustion. And apparently the hatch was also redesigned because it was a difficult one to... nobody could open it, and it wasn't too easy to open or very quick to open.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, those three astronauts died. Actually, the mission originally had some other name, but after that event, they called it Apollo 1.
Apollo 1, yep.
And, but it did push back the Apollo program by about a year or so.
It was a bit of a thing, I suppose. It's unfortunate that that's the way it was. There was another date pretty close to that, January the 22nd in 2003, Pioneer 10 beamed its last signal to Earth. That was the one that was on its first mission to the outer planets. It was the first spacecraft to fly through the asteroid belt. And the first, of course, to visit Jupiter and first to venture out beyond other planets as well. So that was Pioneer in 2003. And another one from yesterday on this day in space. Well, we call it this day, 1978. I don't know if you know much about this. It's the International Ultraviolet Explorer was launched. And it was to study ultraviolet light emitted by stars and other bright objects in the universe. So that was launched in January the 26th, 1978. That wasn't yesterday or even the day before either. So there you are. Now, shall we go on to Artemis?
Oh, yes. The first...
this is getting to be
go
very...
Go ahead there. Tell us everything you know about Artemis. Well,
we had a little discussion, so we had a pre-thingy. But Artemis 2, it's getting ready to go to the moon with the astronauts entering quarantine ahead of the historic NASA moon launch. It took another big step towards launching its next crewed moon mission. Now, this is great. Mm-hmm. Now, you were at something last night?
I was at the Irish Astronomical Society monthly talk. Yes. John Flannery gave it. Of course, very knowledgeable, one of the better known amateur astronomers in the country, I would think, yes.
Yep, and they have windows.
Oh, the launch windows, yeah. Well, you have to make sure...
Starting February.
6th, next Thursday, about 10 days' time, first launch window opens.
Yeah, one in March then, if that doesn't happen, and that's March the 6th until the 9th, and then a little gap until March the 11th, and the last one is April the 1st. And again, April the 3rd to the 6th, and then April the 30th. So there's plenty of time to get ready, but the astronauts are actually in quarantine just at the moment, just to get ready for that. So will they be kept there throughout until April if necessary? Or will they get off early?
I don't know. When did they go into quarantine?
It's only in the last couple of days. Would they just have that?
They might. I think they have to be in quarantine about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but if they miss the first, all of the launch window, they might be let out for 2 weeks and then go back in.
Last Friday they went into quarantine. And this is towards the huge big step towards launching next crewed mission to the moon. They're not going to land this time. They're just going to go round it.
And go be...
Do they go around once?
It's a 10-day mission. So I think they might be going around... I think it's very elliptical orbits around the moon. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be gone... they'll go much further beyond the moon than anybody else has ever gone before. Now, there are four of them, one Canadian, one woman and one Canadian, and three U.S. astronauts, I believe. But, of course, it's not just a NASA mission. You must remember that the capsule that they'll be in is actually a European Space Agency design and build. So it's very much an international endeavor.
It is. We have NASA's Reid Wiseman, we have Victor Glover and Christina Koch, which is a big name in the astronomy or the astronaut world, along with the Canadian Space Agency astronaut Jeremy Hansen. And as you mentioned, just it's going to be roughly a 10-day flight around the moon on what's called the Orion capsule. So put all those into your memory banks, put a note.
Yes, could be as soon as 10 days' time, although there is some people saying, maybe that's a bit optimistic because they haven't finished their first. There's a rehearsal where they have to fuel up the rockets, which takes some time. I don't know how long that takes, and check everything, and then drain the fuel as well. And and I believe some of the earlier windows. I believe there's windows through for each particular day. It's not that window. Launch window, which you see on the calendar there, marked in green. It's not three full days or four full days, I believe it's a few hours in each day. And I hear that some of them are very early in the morning in Florida time, and when it'll still be dark, or at night, mm-hmm. and that maybe they would prefer to launch during the day for this one, because it is, well, it's only the second launch of an Artemis rocket, I suppose, and the first time it'll be crewed. So when they do launch, they'll do a number of orbits around the Earth first as well. I think that might be a day or so, and before they have their translunar injection or whatever they call all the fancy terms they use to leave Earth orbit and head towards the moon.
Yeah, I caught this on the internet. It's a photograph taken by a pilot of the underside of the Aurora Borealis, and his name is Matt Melnick, and he says it's the most incredible display of aurora he's ever seen in his 20 years of flying. This is the most unusual photograph from 37,000 feet. So just at the base, it's like a straight line across. It's like the aurora lights come in and then stop as a plate upside down. But if you want to Google that, just go to Matt Melnick, M-E-L-N-Y-K. And these were taken on the night of the January the 18th into the 19th of January, and were spotted far beyond the usual show. So breathtaking photographs he has of this. And it's just, as I mentioned, just, I don't know if you can see that there, can you? It's just, it just comes in and stops, you know, wherever the, the electrical charged particles meet the atmosphere proper, I suppose, and just get held back.
And have you seen the video or the photographs and the time-lapse video taken by the Russian cosmonaut on the International Space Station?
I have, yeah.
And the first thing you see is, I thought, well, that's Ireland. You can tell the shape. Of course, it's taken at night. Mm-hmm. But you can see the aurora from up in space, of course. And, that was pretty cool. And you're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text on WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032.
Now, Venus. It may get a huge meteor shower this July, and thanks to a long-ago asteroid breakup, and people have been evidently keeping an eye on this, so it could experience a dramatic meteor show this summer, the result of the nearby asteroid. I'm just trying to figure out what the name it was. So we expect it to be around July the 5th, so if you want to get yourself ready for observing it from the Earth, there's not much, chance.
What did we see from Earth?
No, we won't see much. Only super bright fireballs with a magnitude of around minus 12 to minus 15 is what they're saying. So if you can point a telescope that direction, roughly the same brightness as our sky, as the moon, which will be visible from the planet here. So let's see what happens there. So they will say that super fireballs as they enter the atmosphere of Venus, which is not a very pleasant place to be. So they reckon between minus 12 to minus 15 on the scale.
Magnitude scale. From Earth.
Well, they're saying this. It's going to be very difficult for like you and me to see this. No doubt when they have the big telescopes pointing that direction, they get to see an awful lot more. And the near-Earth asteroid was discovered on an orbit that brings it within 2 million kilometres of Earth. About much the same of Venus as it flies through. So we keep an eye on that. So July the 5th on for that particular one, see if we can see any meteor bits and pieces from the asteroid breakup.
Thank you, John. Now, another story we've covered, a name we've mentioned many times here, Suni Williams. She, who, along with Butch Wilmore, way back in June 2024, when they set off on an eight-day mission in Boeing's new Starliner capsule to the ISS. It was basically a test flight in many ways, because it was the first crewed mission of the Boeing's new Starliner. But they were, it wasn't an 8-day mission. It turned out to be more or less an 8-month mission because there was a few problems with it, and they thought to be on the safe side, they wouldn't bring them back in the same capsule. Actually, the same capsule did come back and it did enter the atmosphere and it was fine, but they didn't want to take the chance. Anyway, my point I was trying to get to, that was this lady who was stuck in space for 9 months instead of 8 days has retired from NASA after 27 years of service. She stepped down back in December 27th and she has logged 608 days in space, which is the second most cumulative time in space by a NASA astronaut. And she also ranks 6th on the list of longest single space flights by an American, basically due to that Starliner incident. And she's completed 9 spacewalks, totaling 62 hours, which is the most spacewalk time by a woman and the 4th most on the all-time cumulative spacewalk duration list.
Yeah, that's nice to see. We wish her the best of luck as well, because she's well seasoned in the world of space. Now, last Monday, I missed the Aurora, as somebody didn't. Across the table from me here. But I did get it on Tuesday night, late, coming back from our post-radio meeting in the town hall of the village hall. And there is one forecast again for tonight, believe it or not, although it's a little bit more subdued. And it's a possible midweek uptick is what they're saying about that as well. So if it is clear, and it was clear earlier on this evening for a while, I'm not sure what it's doing now, but it might be worth a look later on to see if you can get any aurora. I got some lovely photographs again. Fantastic colours.
Oh yes.
You don't get to see them really with the naked eye. This is a problem. I did see them, and you can see them just wavering, but you don't get the vivid colours that you do with a camera, because we see things in a different colour spectrum.
Well, yeah, your night vision isn't as sensitive to colour as your day vision, and also as well as that the longer exposure. Although I was talking to a guy last week, and he said to get them nice and sharp, he had to take relatively short exposures.
Yeah,
of course, you had to pump the ISO up, I think, for that one.
You know, the camera phones are great.
Mine
usually takes it in around 3 seconds of an exposure, and it does a great job. It doesn't have to be much, so, I have some great photographs of this one and the last one and the one before that, and no doubt we'll get a few more in the future. So watch out tonight if you can, January the 27th, and they're a little bit subdued, but you might just get to see the flickering of them through a camera lens as well, so look out for that.
Thank you, John. You're one of your favourite pet subjects now, space junk.
Yeah.
This item has more got to do with, junk. Well, it is junk for the most part, re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. Now, normally, try to track them. I know a lot of objects are kept tracked by radar, but using the current system, to try and figure out or calculate where space junk is going to land. They track them by radar prior to breakup or prior to entering the Earth's atmosphere and do some calculations, but they're not very accurate and they can be a bit off the beam and it takes a while. But now they have a new method using equipment that's already in situ.
Yeah, which are earthquake sensors that they say can track space junk that crashes back to Earth, or seismic networks, the fancy word for that. And these offer a new way to track space junk re-entering the atmosphere. how it works is re-entering the atmosphere is just shaking a few molecules and things here and there, or is it when it hits the ground? I'm not too sure on that particular
one. Well, they measured there's 120 seismometers they were used to measure, track a particular piece of junk, but they know from the size, because the object is coming in so fast, 10 times faster than the speed of sound, it creates a sonic boom, and that has that bang or thud or shockwave affects the ground, and that the instruments are so sensitive they can pick that up. And by this, if they know particularly how big or massive the piece is and measure the effect it's had, that sonic boom on the ground, using those seismometers. Yes. they can tell basically how far up it is. And then if you track it with different instruments, you can track it pretty much. Oh, it's coming in fast. And we know where it is at exactly a particular time and exactly how high up it is. And you can calculate really, really quickly within seconds where it's going.
Yeah, they reckon Mach 25 to 30 is what they come hurtling through the atmosphere. And they reckon that it's 10 times the speed of the fastest jet in the world, so that's remarkably quick.
That's the fastest jet in the world. It must be able to do three or four, a fighter jet, I presume.
Yeah, a fighter jet of some sort. You know, Concorde just did
Mach 2.
Mach 2, that was still pretty quick.
And just back to...
Yeah, and if we remember, November 2022, Spain and France shut parts of their airspace for about 40 minutes as a giant piece of Chinese rocket was predicted to potentially come crashing down in southern Europe, and the shutdown diverted or delayed hundreds of flights and cost millions of dollars. That's when you don't want to be, you don't want to own an airline, so there we go.
Actually, there was another incident back in 1996 when debris from a Russian probe called Mars 96 that re-entered over South America, and it was believed at the time that that had a radioactive source on board, and it was believed at the time that the whole item or spacecraft probe survived intact and splashed down into the ocean. But apparently some years later then some researchers reported finding what they called artificial plutonium in a Chilean glacier, which they suspect leaked from the Mars 96 power source as it broke up during descent. So it's important, of course, to try and track this these type of objects, and so you know exactly where they're going to land. And this method using these seismic instruments seems more accurate than the method used heretofore.
Yep, there you go. Now, Jupiter's volcanic moon Io may be a little bit hotter, even up to hundreds of times hotter than scientists have thought, and they're using the data that they got from the NASA Juno spacecraft. Now, that's a spacecraft I haven't heard an awful lot about. I haven't looked it up for a while as to what it's exactly doing, whether it's...
The Juno?
Yeah. Juno. Yeah, it's going to eventually crash into, well, call it the surface of it, but scientists have now discovered that the solar system's most volcanic body is even hotter than we thought. In fact, Jupiter's moon Io could be emitting hundreds of times as much heat from its surface as was previously estimated. Now, if you look at the surface of Io from, well, we call it close-up, it was from the Juno spacecraft, so it's a good bit away still. So it's still pretty volcanic or hot in the interior. So they're having a little look at that to see what is happening there. And just one thing on the U.S. Space Force, which has awarded its first of its kind $52 million contract to deorbit its satellites. And satellites and space junk has been a huge issue and still is a huge issue, because every time there's a rocket launch, more and more and more junk, bits and pieces, paint flecks, rocket boosters and all sorts of things remain up there. A lot of it comes back down due to the minor gentle pull from the Earth, but still there are a colossal amount of bits and pieces still up there in 20,000, could be up to 100,000 with paint, flecks of paint. And if you've ever seen the film Gravity with George Clooney, they gave us a very detailed avoidance system for some space junk, and they gave us an idea of the speed of some of these bits and pieces. So they're travelling 17,500 miles per hour, some of them in a different direction than the space station would be, etc. And sometimes the spent satellites crash into each other and create much more debris in the low Earth orbit as well. So they've got to get it down somehow. And they've awarded the first of its kind $52 million contract to deorbit these satellites. So I presume they go for the big ones. And how they're going to do it, whether they use the nets or they come up and just give them a nudge, I'm not quite sure exactly how they do it, but I'm going to keep an eye on that just to see what happens.
Thank you, John. That's all the time we have. I was hoping to do a few more things. See, China are preparing their new offshore launching system.
Yes,
very interesting, but no time to go into that at the moment. Perhaps we will carry that over. That's our goal, is our good intentions. But anyway, that's all the time we have this evening. Thank you, John, for your news items and for driving the sound desk. But that's all from me, Ben Emmons, from this edition of The Astronomy Show. It's music all the way now until 2 a.m. here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Dublin's Greatest Hits, followed at 10 p.m. with Nigel Wood's Ear to the Globe and his World Music Mix. And then from midnight until 2 a.m. it's After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time. 7:30 p.m. next week we will be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.